After 32 years, I came out of the closet as a gay Christian pastor. Finally, on the outside of that suffocating prison, I'm looking around and I'm like, we can't stay here. It's not enough to become informed. We have to do something about the harm we're still witnessing within systems and spaces we've been loyal to for so long. It's time we become reformers. Hello, and welcome to Confessions of a Reformer. I'm your host, Mike Miyashiro, and I'm doing a solo episode today. Keep in mind, I'm walking in nature, so if you hear birds chirping in the background or a plane or something, you like how planes are part of nature, just know that's what that is. I'm going to do a solo episode where I'm just going to share with you some of the things I want to be saying out loud about being a trans ally. I am not a trans person, but I am a trans ally, and I do a lot of advocacy for trans people and the trans community. That's not something that I set out to do initially, but given the things that come across my desk and just a lot of legislation that's trying to be passed in America lately, I can't help but have to stand up and speak on behalf of this part of the LGBTQ plus community. When I came out as gay, I had lots of people asking me, okay, what about trans people, right? And they were like, I think sincere and well-meaning and kind of trepidatious, but genuinely didn't know what to do with the quote-unquote T in the LGBTQ plus community. And I didn't have a ton of answers right away because I didn't really know trans people and hadn't really thought about it. I was just trying to like survive and get through my own process, right? But I learned a lot through that coming out experience, and I had to let myself be impacted by what I felt and saw and heard in my own journey. And what I was expecting of like allies for me, I couldn't help but have to expect from me for trans people. And that meant that I had a lot of learning to do. So I did that. I went on a journey of learning, and I'm still, of course, learning, but I knew next to nothing about the trans experience and, you know, the arguments against the existence and validity of trans people. I hadn't really like listened to a ton of it, hadn't given it a lot of thought. But thankfully, you know, since then till now, I now know several trans people and have read several books and talked to lots of different kinds of trans people about the experience and the things that come up against them, things they have to navigate on a regular basis. And I can't help but feel compassion and feel protective and this need to come to their defense, not because they're powerless, but because they are a significant minority of our population, right? Like in America, trans people make up 1% of our country, which if you think about that, it's kind of absurd given how much attention and like targeted legislation they receive. It's ridiculous. And I think more telling of some other problems going on. So anyway, I just wanted to like speak to that in this episode because it just, I'm surprised if I look at like, you know, just my posts on Instagram, for example, and I look at how many of them are about trans people or the trans experience or anti-trans rhetoric, like it's actually coming up pretty regularly as of late. So I wanted to just give some of my own personal like human commentary and response to some of this. I don't expect this to be like a super informative, comprehensive episode. I more just want to like speak as a fellow human being to what I'm seeing and experiencing in the midst of all this. So big picture, like in America, obviously there's a lot of vitriol, specifically from the far right side of American politics that likes to target the trans community and trans people. And it specifically likes to dehumanize, question, invalidate, you know, there are attempts to erase people like this, what their experiences are, the process and journey they're going through, the kind of support that exists for them. There's a lot of weird, specific anti-energy for them. And when I think about it, I'm like, I don't think the people who are opposing trans rights are like so concerned about trans people specifically, although I think that's part of it. And then I also don't think that the people defending the validity and care of trans people are coming at that from their own personal experience of being trans, right? Obviously, like they are a minority. So it's like, what are we fighting about, right? Like, I don't know that all of us have trans people as like in our proximity as much as, like, I don't know if the fight here is, you know, whether trans people should or shouldn't exist. I think big picture, the bigger picture, what we're fighting about is the individual rights and freedoms that people should possess in our country and then people who think the opposite of that, right? It feels like the people who are defending marginalized communities often go to bat in these political discussions and in the voting that they do. We're over here like fighting for, hey, individual people deserve freedom and opportunity and protections that everyone else has. We need to not be discriminatory about who gets what kind of privileges or opportunities or protections, right? And if it can happen to them, it can happen to me. What happens to my neighbor happens to me, which, by the way, feels like a pretty quote unquote Christ-like posture to be taking in these matters. And then the opposing side of this seems to not prioritize or value individual freedoms as much as a more collective, conforming groupthink, very evangelical, right? Like white, patriarchal, cisgender agenda. And they don't care about individual freedoms. They want to protect this specific ethos or way of life because it's the way it's always been, or it's all they know, or whatever the reason is behind it. It feels like that's, I'm assuming, that's the driver, is like they want to protect a way of life that they feel like the existence of trans people or queer people in general is threatening. Women being empowered is threatening to them. People of color are threatening to this, you know. And the weird thing is, like, I think the people who think this way on the extreme side of it are actually a minority. I don't think most of the people who represent that group are all as extreme as what we hear in the media. In my from what I can see and what I'm coming across, I don't think that they feel as extremely as they're being represented. But it feels like there's just this big pull between individual freedoms matter and everyone deserves the same rights on one side, and then the other side is we all need to adhere to a specific prescribed way of being human, and any deviation from that should be discouraged or punished by the government. Awkwardly, that same group are the ones who used to claim small government as a priority or value. So, anyway, that feels like that's kind of the bigger picture. But it's so awkward to continue to see trans issues continue to be prioritized and focused on and targeted specifically by right-wing conservative people, when there are so many other issues in our country that do deserve immediate attention, have a lot more negative impact on our overall societal health, that aren't doing well, that the right seems to be ignoring or not caring about or whatever, and instead targeting the queer community specifically and scapegoating, especially trans people, to, I guess, like whip up frenzy and fear and votes, right? Like to get people to align with their political agenda and vote based on their where they're trying to go. And it's not because the opposing party actually wants to eradicate trans people as much as they want to manipulate their base to behave and vote the way they want them to. And so, like, it's awkward if you study history how much of this behavior has already been practiced, right? Like the powerful majority, or the people who are in positions of power, groups especially, have tended to bully and scapegoat a weaker minority in order to, like, detract from things they don't want to be accountable to or be held responsible for or, like, have to address. It's easier just to, like, whip people up into a cultural and emotional frenzy than it is to actually do work that matters. And so I come across a lot of content that is trying to criminalize trans people and the support of trans people, trying to take away their rights, their protections, their health care, when they've already had such a difficult time trying to find their way in the world. And it just feels like there's such a huge clash in values, right? Like, it feels like it's not just about politics at this point. A lot of this, and maybe this has been true for a long time, and I'm just like getting more and more involved now, but it feels like we're less arguing over how certain things should be done and more arguing about what even matters in the world, you know? Which, that's kind of a crazy thing to say, but the more polarized our culture becomes, the more it's starting to feel like we're not disagreeing over the way we should go about managing public life, right? We're disagreeing about what goodness even is, what love is even, right? Like, that sounds crazy to say, but I think that's accurate, especially in my work with evangelicals. It feels like they say things and they're using the English language to say them, but when they say certain things, they mean something else than if I were to say the same exact sentence. Like if they say, "I love you, but," in my world, on my end of receiving that kind of quote unquote love, I already know that statement is not about love. And so it's weird to watch, especially evangelicals, play into this, "I am arrested by a mandate of love that's really inconvenient and something I don't actually want to be doing. So I'll say the word just to check the box, but actually, I'm gonna fill in the blank. I'm gonna discriminate. I'm gonna hate. I'm gonna exclude. I'm gonna demean. I'm gonna marginalize. I'm gonna bully people because I'm justified based on this verse out of context to protect my own small, limited experience and refusal to actually look at my own life and grow as a person." I know I'm overgeneralizing, but it does continuously like feel like that's kind of what's going on here. And obviously, if we were to bring some right-wing leaning person to talk to this, they would sound so different. But I'm not that. I used to be actually, and I'm not that anymore. And that's part of why I feel the need to address this stuff is because I remember where this stuff came from. It doesn't make sense to me anymore, and I should have like taken more notes back when I was still drinking that Kool-Aid, but I'm glad to have had that toxicity removed from my life for the most part. You know, there's always ways that I know I can find there's a need for some more growth or like clarity or education. But so much of my thinking, especially when it comes to the political side of things, has changed dramatically in the last couple of years since I came out and deconstructed. And so much of my political leaning was like heavily influenced by my faith community, by the church that I went to and the people that I listened to, you know? So if we're fundamentally disagreeing about what even is goodness in the world, that's a really different conversation. And it feels like the schools of thought are getting kind of further and further away from each other. We're doing a lot less listening than we used to. And I think the listening is important. I think having meaningful dialogue is important. And I see people show up like that in my comments. And sometimes that stuff gets said. And actually, what I hear is, let's ignore the cost that victims are paying for this quote unquote discussion. Let's have everyone sit at an equal table. Let's ignore socioeconomic status. Let's ignore race. Let's ignore privileges of a lot of different varieties, right? And just pretend like none of that exists. Let's talk in this like fake theoretical space. And let's like throw these ideas around. And I'm realizing the people who tend to say that tend to be pretty privileged themselves. And I hope I never lose my sensitivity to the dull numbness that I think that perspective tends to bring. It's easy to ignore the marginalized, victimized experience when that's not you, when it doesn't affect you, when you don't have to think about it because you're naturally protected by some of the vulnerabilities that other kinds of people in the world have to face. And so when we're talking about having a conversation, I'm like, yeah, I think, you know, constructive dialogue is important. We need to do it. But potentially, before dialogue is going to be constructive, we have to get on the same page about what our definitions are for the basics. Literally, like, what is good? Like, again, that just sounds so fundamental, but I think that's true. I think that there is such a disparity between the aisles, right, of what we even define as good in terms of like just being an individual in a society, what like a responsible citizen looks like and behaves like and thinks like. There's such a disagreement about that. And so I don't know where and when this has gotten lost in the process, but it feels like it was a long time ago. And especially just in human development, it happens earlier in people's lives than these later conversations are able to address. And so you only have to talk to somebody who disagrees with you on these matters significantly for like a minute or two before it starts to go off the rails, right? And then we just start accusing each other of being bigoted or overly emotional or overly sensitive or, you know, incapable of listening to an opposing view or whatever. And then we just like invalidate the whole experience. But I'm like, I don't know if we can talk about this stuff if we actually do define these words as different things. And I think even like religious indoctrination and bigotry is probably at the root of the thing I'm talking about. I know a lot of evangelicals who use the word love, and they do things in this idea that they call love that I'm like, I literally disagree that that's love. That's not love. It's not how love works. It's not how love behaves. It's not how love treats people. It's not how love like shows up in the universe. It's not. And we're talking about like this, like pretty like big idea. And so when evangelicals take the idea of love, for an example, and they turn it into this, it's this is the thing. Well, they claim that God's love is unconditional. And then, so they'll say that. They'll, like tip their hat to it. They'll acknowledge, like, yeah, God loves everyone unconditionally. And then the next thing after that always is conditions around that love. And the thing is, like, I don't think they're even able to admit that that's happening. They can't even see it because it's just become so part of the way they think and see the world. And I'm not trying to like just other evangelicals, but the reality is that's what evangelicals do. It's part of the ethos is to other people. You're either with us or you're against us, right? You either love Jesus and have sworn fealty to the throne of God, or you're the enemy. You work for Satan, right? And we have to like convert you before we're going to be on the same page and be able to like work together. And before my love is going to feel like love to you, because until then, my love for you is going to feel like hate or rejection or judgment or condemnation. And so anybody who doesn't kiss the ring, if you will, right, of Jesus in their minds, it doesn't matter how you experience their quote unquote love. Your opinion, your perspective, your experience is invalid. In some ways, your experience doesn't exist. You are deceived. Therefore, you actually aren't having an experience. You are having a deception, which doesn't register as something real in, right? Which what I'm saying sounds insane, but I actually don't think I'm being dramatic or exaggerating in any way. And partly I feel the audacity to just say it like this because I used to think like that. I was indoctrinated to think that way and to treat people that way. And it's embarrassing to admit, but it's true. That is how I saw the world and saw people. And I had a lot to like recover from, right? I had a lot to apologize for and to clean up, and it's ugly. But while that is happening, I don't know how we're supposed to have constructive conversations because the people who are in the oppressive party who are looking for ways to exclude and dominate and marginalize people are the ones who scream, let's agree to disagree. Let's love the sinner and hate the sin, right? Like they're the ones who want to like claim that we don't have to actually value this conversation and work toward an agreement or like a solution. They're like, you go over there, we'll be over here. And I'm willing to do that because I know in my mind, eventually I'm going to win. Jesus is going to come and wipe you out. So let's just not talk to each other until then. It's kind of the attitude, which is filthy and really not productive. And so when they are claiming this whole like, let's agree to disagree, it often centers around people's humanity, like people's right to exist. People's personal freedoms to express themselves and to be authentic about the way they're experiencing their lives and the world. Evangelicals often want to just agree to disagree that that person is having that experience, that that person is the kind of person they're claiming they are her, which is unbelievably arrogant and so ignorant and so disrespectful. It's like, I mean, I could go off. It's just unbelievable. But this happens, right? Like this shows up in my DMs and my comment section on the regular. And not just to me, but about queer people especially. And so there are so many layers, and there's so much nuance to understanding the intersectionality of what it means to be a human being in 2024. And if we can't get on the same page about defining the basics, like what is evil, what is good, what is love, right? What is empathy? What is compassion? What is kindness? I don't know how much conversation with us is going to be productive. And so I'm over here like, is conversation the solution? Do we need to do better at listening to each other? Because I'm kind of over here like, I don't think that's true. And here's part of why I say that. I spent over 30 years listening to the right-wing, white evangelical, Trump-supporting party. Obviously, there weren't Trump supporters back all that time, but they became the group of people who let Trump happen and like we're emboldened by all this atrocity. I listened for a long time. So like when people show up, be like, hey, let's listen to it. I'm like, no, hang on. I did a lot of listening. Like I listened so hard that I dehumanized myself for decades in my life. I mentally and emotionally and relationally suffered because of how well I listened. I didn't just listen. I believed, I embodied, I embraced, I celebrated, I practiced what I listened to, you know? And so when they show up and say, like, let's just can listen, I'm like, no, that's not how this works. At least not for me. I can't speak for anybody else, but I am done listening to the bigoted, oppressive religious community that wants to dictate and control how other people get to live. Like, I'm done with that. That's not, I'm over here saying from my lived experience with my whole chest, that is not good. It's not good. So I'm not going to do it. I'm not saying I can't listen to or talk to somebody who comes from this place, but I'm done listening to those ideas. I'm done trying to justify or make sense of or consider how marginalizing and oppressing and excluding people might be a good thing, might be important, might be healthy for us. Like, I'm done entertaining those ideas. I renounce it. I'm like, no, I've done it. I've experienced it. The cause and effect, the cost. I'm over here saying with my whole life, it's bad. I'm not doing it anymore. And I don't think any of us should be doing that. We should be getting rid of it because its fruit has borne. It is proven to be harmful and gross, and we shouldn't be listening to it anymore. And so the people who are over here trying to perpetuate that same stuff, I'm like, no, this is not how this is going to work. I'm not listening to that anymore. So I actually don't know if conversation is the solution. I'm seeing people say that stuff in the comments, and I'm like, I don't think that's the answer. Yes, somewhere down the road, that's going to be an important thing, right? We need to keep doing it. But I think before the conversation matters, we need to get really clear about what we even define, how we even define some of these terms that mean a lot in the conversations we're supposed to be having. You know, this is not what I meant to be talking about on this episode, but this is absolutely connected. I was responding to an email this week of some bigoted evangelical, and I was realizing, like, to ask this person to empathize is actually, like, in her mind, I'm asking her to betray her values and ethics and morality in terms of her own conception of cosmic goodness, right? Like, if she's gonna quote unquote be empathetic toward a queer person, in her mind, with her culture, she believes if she's empathetic toward a queer person, she's supporting or validating their sin, right? Or their lifestyle, whatever. She's partnering with evil or the devil in their life. And so she actually literally cannot empathize with the queer person. And I'm like, can we just pause and take a step back and observe that this is how evangelicalism behaves? And can we acknowledge that that's not good? That failure or inability or prohibition to empathize with another human being is probably not a Christ-like attribute to be developing, but that's a very prevalent evangelical trait. Right, I'm sorry, I could go off and off. I'm gonna step off this road, but and if we're gonna get honest about this, like, the in my mind, the evangelical right-wing conservative party is gonna have to get really honest with how a lot of the stuff they're touting doesn't actually add up for people who aren't straight white men. And there's a lot of harm and discrepancy, and there are a lot of potholes to that way of thinking and treating people. Yeah. So I'm over here like, okay, I don't know how to get through to the MAGA Republicans. I don't know that I care to do that. I'm not interested in trying to change their minds necessarily. I think that we need people to do it. It's just not going to be me. I'm not dedicating my energy and work toward that. But I think there are a lot of people in the middle, right, who kind of are considerate or inexperienced or uneducated to a degree enough that they're like, oh, I think I'd like to know more. I'd be willing to listen. And I'm like, that group of people, if they're willing to listen, like, hey, I'm one person. I can share my experience and my perspective. I think my perspective has more weight because of the level of like engagement and years of genuine application that I gave to this one way of living, and then had this, huge life shift and like deep revelation about how wrong it was. And I've been walking out the other side of this. Like, I'm like, that probably matters somewhere. And so if my voice and my story can help open some eyes, clear some things up, I'm like, please, here it is. But at the end of the day, trans people, just like any other kind of queer person, just like any other kind of person of color or person like gender, like whatever, human beings deserve dignity and safety and support. They deserve to be validated. And we got to like step back from the arrogance that we get to define how other people exist. Like, I don't know where that's coming from. Been here for a while. We gotta check that, you know? Like, we don't get to tell other people how they exist in the world. So anyway, wow, this episode is gonna be called Trans Allyship, and I'm not even sure that that's like accurate anymore at this point. But that's kind of what comes up for me is like, with where I'm sitting at this point in time with this stuff. I'm like, I want to be constructive. I want to do good work. I want to help. And so at this point, I think most of my advocacy is dedicated toward helping the marginalized side of this, trans and queer people, just like giving them voice, representation, advocating for their side of things. And the thing is, like, it's not even, they don't even have a side. They are our side. You know what I mean? Like, we are, they're not on some other planet or some other strain of humanity that, like, is separate from us. They are human like we are, right? Like, it's weird to talk about trans people as they, like, they're over there. Because trans people are who I am, you know? Like, so this is kind of messy, but, you know, this is like an honest, this is like a journal entry at this point. Like, these things are not checking out for me. And so, anyway, if you listener have stuff you'd like to share from any of your own perspective and experience, give an insight for me on some of this, I'd love to hear it. So this invitation is always out there. You can email me at contact@mikemyashiro.com. You can DM me on Instagram if that's easier. But I'd love to hear your thoughts. And as I close this, trans community, you trans people out there, I want you to know I see you. I care about you. I love you. I validate your existence. I trust you. I think that what you're experiencing is real, and you're the best person to tell us what's actually going on inside of you. And you should be free to express yourself however feels the most authentic and true for you, which is naturally what any person wants anyway, you know? So I'm so sorry that there are a bunch of ill-informed, kind of hateful people in the world who want to use you as a way to like assert their power and avoid their own journeys. Like, it sucks. It's so unfair. It's so inappropriate. It's not okay. Like, that's evil. It's bad. It shouldn't be happening. I'm sorry that that's part of the deal. But I'm on your team, and I'm gonna do what I can to help make this place safer and more conducive for people like you to exist too. All right, everybody, thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. If you want to comment, like, share, rate my podcast, it'd be great. I'll see you in the next episode. Bye. Listen, there's more where this came from. If you want to dive deeper, check out mikemyashiro.com.